IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme, The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
And you're very welcome back to the programme, approaching 10 minutes past 10. Lots of interesting stuff to talk about over the next hour, the next 2 hours, in fact. So stay right where you are. But first, I want to get to some of your comments coming in so far this morning. And thank you so much for taking the time. It's greatly appreciated. We were speaking about that scam before the break. Mary says, Greg, my friend was scammed the exact same way with the exact instructions given, and they got scammed for €5,500. The scammers are also cloning Amazon's exact phone numbers and all transaction details. I got scammed on Amazon, but it was the cloned Amazon, and that's it. You see, they can replicate the numbers, they can replicate the websites. And as we heard from Tracy earlier on, you know, we're all very busy, aren't we? We're being pulled left and right, and they know exactly how to exploit that. Nick Stapleton from the BBC did a great piece on scammers not too long ago, well worth watching. Another, if anyone wants some eye-opening about these scammers, Scam Interceptors on BBC One on Monday night at 8:30 is a great watch. You'll be extra careful after that. Indeed, I on TikTok there is a person that exposes scammers as well, which makes for quite interesting. He actually infiltrates the scammers, their webcams and phone lines and what have you. I discovered 6 months ago that Bank of Ireland used call centres in India. When I rang the call centre, the scammers would ring straight away. They have the same accents of the same area in India. The banks have given them the technology to do this. The guards will tell you not to interact with them, but I do. I tell them that I don't use any of the services that they mention. If you get aggressive and tell them that they're wrong, they leave you alone. And banks that sold their ATMs use Indian call centres. I request to be put through to an Irish call centre so I know that it's not a scam. The government needs to pay people in Ireland to man these call centres. Big opportunity missed yesterday to have a double header in Bala Buffet, just like Tyrone ladies and men's team had in Omagh. Would be a boost for ladies team to have some of the 5,000 supporters in Bala Buffet than the 200 only 30 kilometres away in Letterkenny Corporation. Cooperation between both organisations will hopefully improve under Mary Coughlan's tenure. Indeed, mixed results, obviously. A great Donegal performance, or a good Donegal performance. We'll talk about that later. The ladies listen losing out. But why wouldn't it be a doubleheader? We can ask that question a little later on. Stay with us if you're interested in that. Another caller in that regard, regarding the Gaelic football yesterday, the ladies were playing in Letterkenny. Why did the GEA not have a double header so that they could attend both in McCool Park? Not many people were able to attend the ladies' game because they were in Bala Buffet. It is kind of interesting because there's a big campaign going at the moment from Lidl. It's very effective. And ladies GEA, we covered it on this programme as to the poor attendance at football matches. Or that more people should go and support the ladies in their games. That's what we could do, but you don't want it set up whereby you have to choose either, do you? So I think that's shot themselves in the foot a little bit there. If it was not possible, and it wouldn't be practical for a lot of people to attend the ladies' game and then the men's game. I've just got a spam text that threw in my phone. Shall I open it for the crack to see what it says? This is actually really quite interesting because I am due a parcel at the moment. And I just got a scam message from 0874308961. And it reads, unsuccessful delivery attempt for parcel IRL 384 blah, blah, blah. Go to https://post-dhl-tracks and confirm your address to attempt your delivery again. I'd almost be tempted to do it. I've clicked the link. Oh, no, I've accidentally clicked the link just to see where the website goes. And my phone says it's not a good website. Don't go near it. Okay. I just wanted to click it, see if anything was obvious to save you doing it. But anyway, it is interesting. Waiting on a package today. And also eFlow. All of these go into my spam. I don't actually get them. They go into the spam folder. eFlow, you've been recorded using the motorway without paying the appropriate charge. Visit eFlow payment -fee -online for additional fine of $57.50 will be sent to your home. Another scam. On post, your parcel has been redirected. UPS is subject to customs. Panel-ups.com. These aren't website addresses at all. Netflix, your last payment was declined. Please confirm your information. Go to reactivate-account.net. Another scam. More from UPS. Revenue, our records show that your tax refund of €247 can now be claimed. I didn't realise I get so many of these. This is only in the last couple. Here's another one. Hi, Dad. My phone is broken. Can you send me a message on WhatsApp on this number? And it's a link. That's a dirty one, isn't it? Hi, ma'am. Another one. I broke my phone. WhatsApp me on my new number, 0899680975. And on they go. Another one from government. The government trying to give me money, which is nice. But actually, just as we were speaking, I got that scam text in. And I am waiting on a parcel. why did they send people out to play during the bad weather last week? How was it okay to play? Asks a listener. That was in the McKenna Cup final. Is that what you're talking about? In fairness and for balance, a comment on the alignment of HR salaries with RTE. In fairness and for balance, a comment on the alignment of HR salaries with RTE. I don't know what that actually means. My ignorance, pardon me. Obviously, I know nothing about music because I thought the song was pathetic. Well, you do know something about music. You have your own tastes and you didn't like it. And sometimes I think our taste on things, we try and sort of get everyone to think the exact same. But music is so subjective. And you could even go music. That's not music. But that's also subjective to artists as well. So, I mean, if you didn't like it, that's your personal opinion. And if you were on the voting panel, it wouldn't have got through, but you weren't, and it did. So I respect your opinion, and it stands there with equal strength and power as anyone else's. Should send the turkey back to the Eurovision. Better than that song, says the listener. And on it goes. Mixed views, actually. But there is a mixture. I'm going to keep going with the comments after we take a break and go to our next guest. Stay right where you are.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Now, the DUP is set for a crunch meeting tonight as its party leader briefs senior members on British government proposals aimed at ending Stormont's power-sharing impasse. The DUP has been using a veto power to blockade Stormont's devolved institutions for 2 years now. This in protest at post-Brexit trading arrangements that have created trade barriers between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And the party has been involved in protracted talks now with the British government aimed at securing concessions on the arrangements that would address its concerns around trade and sovereignty. Right, OK, Pat McCart joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Pat. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
It's good to have you with us, as always. Right. I suppose the DUP have, I don't know if you could say they've been painted into a corner now, but it's coming close to a decision time for them. How do you assess what's going on?
Well, the Secretary of State, Chris Heaton-Harris, gave the deadline for February 8th for the restoration of devolution. So without question, your term, they have painted themselves into a corner, but they have to make a decision somewhere before now. Between February 8th, Greg. So there's a meeting tonight of the Assembly, or the Executive, sorry. And there's 130 members of the Executive. And apparently, by all accounts, Geoffrey Donaldson, the leader, is going to give a detailed update on what's going on. Now, there was a meeting about 10 days ago, Friday, where they thought there would be a big decision, and they sort of chickened out of making a decision then. But the bottom line is they have to make one soon. So I presume the only complication that tonight's, Greg, apparently the officer board is the only people can make the decision to accept, you know, that famous expression, yay or nay, in regard to this. And apparently there's not a meeting of that tonight. Now, well, they could nod it through the whole assembly, saying the executive saying we agree to it or not. But legally, as far as I know, only the officer board can accept this deal or not. So if they're not meeting tonight, it suggests that, first of all, it's going to be softening up the party to tell them what's happening. And then, depending on the whatever way they read the room tonight, they will make a decision maybe tomorrow. Yeah. Or Geoffrey Donaldson, whether they return or not.
I beg your pardon. Geoffrey Donaldson, though, seems to be in an impossible position, because even if he does sort of try and impress for an acceptance of what's on the table. I read last night an Orange Lodge, which includes two former DUP politicians, tells Geoffrey the party must not return to Stormont until its seven tests are fully met. Members unanimously expressed grave concerns about the likely deal with no voice of support. So that's, I suppose you could call the grassroots and people with influence. So if he goes against that kind of mood, that kind of opinion within his own party, well, that sort of really raises question marks about his.
For such an experienced politician, Sir Geoffrey has left himself very little wriggle room. When you ask Greg for seven tests to be met and say you won't return, well, basically you're sort of saying, right, unless I get my seven tests, I've lost. And Greg, he has lost. The British government, I don't think, has moved in him. Now, they've made promises on in regard to funding. They've made promises in regard to the Green Lane that there will be some legislation introduced. And they've also been made promises that they won't diverge from the EU in regard to various trade standards and so on. But that's all promises. It's not legislation. It's not hard and fast. But I love there was one that Jim Allister, Kate Hoey, Ben Habib, the sort of right-wing Tory MP, and Jamie Brisson issued a statement yesterday in which he said that the perversion of a constitutional obscenity of a partitioning border in the Irish Sea was totally unacceptable, and the DUP should not return to the executive unless it was removed. I thought these people don't do irony if you consider the fact that they don't see anything wrong with partitioning the island of Ireland. But that's a sort of side issue. The bottom line, Greg, is that Sir Geoffrey's going to be between a rock and a hard place no matter what way he goes, because without question, I remember, Greg, way back in the day when I was a young editor in the Derry Journal, old Republicans used to say to me that the whole idea of the Troubles was to make Northern Ireland ungovernable, to portray it as a failed entity. It seems now more than ironic that the people ensuring that Northern Ireland is a failed entity are the unionists. Like when there's no government, there's no executive. 150,000 people took to the streets 12 days ago and protest. The public service workers haven't got paid. They have the worst health waiting lists in all of Britain. And they have the least disposable income in all of Britain. So Northern Ireland is not exactly a success story right now.
No, and it's just interesting to see the language. You mentioned Jamie Bryson there. For all his faults and otherwise, he is an influential voice. He's calling this the surrender deal. But it seems really that the DUP are outliers in this. And, you know, what can they achieve by not going in any longer? Because for all the reasons that you've been outlining here, it's hard to see how it plays out if it's another no or another nay.
Well, if it's another nay, the DUPs are very sticky wicked. What I think might happen, Greg, we don't know the deal yet. There might be more sweeteners than we know. Geoffrey Donaldson has probably got, right, first of all, they've got $3.5 billion, and that will sort out some of the public pay sector. There are also promises on the Green Lane. Now, Chris Heaton Harris, they might pull out a few rabbits out of the hat in the next couple of days to sweeten the deal and all the rest. But the one thing that the unions can't do is stay out. Devolution, if there is going to be a return to direct rule, no matter what way they dress it up, there will have to be an advanced rule or an enhanced rule for Dublin. And that's a reality. And as well as that, there's more and more trade now going north and south. And there's no way, Greg, the one bottom line is there is no way that the British government are going to start renegotiating with the EU. That's a done deal. And basically what's on the table is now what's on the table.
Yeah, but I think you've mentioned, as you always do, a few interesting points in that, you know, when you set out the seven red lines that can't be met, they will not be met. So then you could say, well, sweetening the deal, once you've said we can't accept unless we get our seven measures met. So even if the deal is sweetened, can you accept it? And really, too, is this not really all about not wanting to play second fiddle to Sinn Féin?
Well, there are so many people that actually believe that's the big issue. Can you imagine, Greg, say tonight, hypothetically, it's accepted and it's not just through. And on Thursday, there's a new formation of an administration at Stormont, and out front and centre is Sinn Féin's Michelle O'Neill. The symbolicness of that is unbelievable. For the first time in the foundation of the Northern Ireland state, basically a nationalist or Republican is out front. You know, the whole premise of the partition was to almost to have a unionist majority in perpetuity. And like for 50 years, we had a one-party state, and we all know the problems of that caused. Now, for unionism, symbolically, Greg, that will make a hell of a difference, and it will certainly cause a major issues. And a lot of people think that one of the big issues for people like Bryson, Kate Hoey, Ben Habib and various others, and Jim Allister, is they simply can't stomach a nationalist first minister. And there does seem to be an element of truth in that.
And as much as there's politics being played with Britain, politics being played within Northern Ireland and played north and south in Ireland, there is an awful lot of politics being played within unionism in Northern Ireland at the moment. Like, if there were another election, you know, who would be standing for what? What would the DUP would be standing for? What alternative voices might be there? More hardline voices, I don't know. Like, it would make it would make for, I mean, as I say, I think there's a bit of jockeying going on here as well within unionism, which is probably, I don't think I've revealed anything. I think that's pretty obvious.
Well, Greg, I think it was John Hume said many years ago that every time unionism walked away from the table, they came back weaker. And if they walk away from the table this time, they will certainly come back weaker, because they're going to be another split and another split. The problem for unionism, there's no unity in unionism. You can go from the sort of loyalists, and then you can go into the DUP, you can go to Jim Allister, and then you can go to the UUP. Like people like, what do you call him, Doug Beattie, very much see the danger of what's happening right now. He is basically saying unionists are doing more damage to the union than nationalists have ever done. And they are, you know, you can see Rishi Sunak, Greg, has basically bowed out. I think he came to Northern Ireland once. He has got his deal done, the Windsor framework. The last thing he wants to do is open a Pandora's box on the Tory party and start a whole lot of infighting again. He's got a deal done with the EU. And I presume Sir Keir Starmer, if he is the next Prime Minister, is most certainly going to try and work even closer with the EU. He's already said that. Brexit has not been the sort of goal, the honey, the land of milk and honey that everybody was told. You know, the $350 million a week for the National Health Service and all that sort of stuff. Brexit has proved a bit of a disaster. The British economy is basically flatlining. They haven't made the big deals with America or anywhere else, that the big trade deals that they said they were going to make. It hasn't worked out at all. So their biggest market, what, 550 million people is in the EU. It's in their interest to stay as closely aligned with the EU as possible. So I don't think they're going to worry too much about 900,000 unionists in Northern Ireland when they have 600 or 550 million people in Europe to do a trade deal with.
And the DUP are trying to sort of, as you say, where do they get support? Trying to tell the British people about sea borders and stuff, you know. And you know, we need to cut our ties with the EU. And as you say, the sentiment over there is the majority actually now think maybe Brexit wasn't a good idea. So your argument kind of is really falling on deaf ears. And if you're in London, you're hearing how much money's going in there, what the you're going, well, you know, what else do you need? We know there's a bit of apathy in Britain to Northern Ireland and its politics now, post Troubles, which thank God were post Troubles. So and then you wonder what the audience is within Northern Ireland as well. So to put you to the pin of your collar, then Pat, how do things play out as far in your opinion?
I think on the officer board of the DUP, I think Sir Jeff has about a 75 majority. There's 12 members. I think 7 would vote for a deal to return. 5 probably won't. Some of the big beasts, Greg, in the DUP people, like I was watching Sir Geoffrey's speech last week in the House of Commons, and I was thinking to myself, why is Ian Paisley sitting behind him so directly? Was that either to sort of show support, or to make sure that everybody saw the expression on his face that he was not in favour of what's going on here? But Lord Dodds, Dodds is not in favour of it. Lord Morrow is not in favour of it. Ian Paisley, I'm not sure, but I think he's against it as well. But then you have people like Gavin Robinson and Michelle McElveen. Edwin Poots, apparently the former First Minister, is in favour of it. Gregory Campbell stayed very quiet, but the fact that he hasn't said anything against it, I presume he's one of the persuadable. So according to various sources, 7 of the 12 members of the officer board in favour of Sir Geoffrey going back into Stormont. If that's the case, then Stormont could be up. But the opposition...
How do they bring... If it's so divided at the top table... How can, and there'll be an awful lot of anger from the rank and file members, how can they stay in that position then? Because they say, right, this is what we suggest, but if it's not what you want, I mean, how could you stay in that position if you make a decision that seemingly is so at odds with what these powerful voices and Orange Lodges and others think? It just means your position is somewhat untenable. You couldn't get it over the line with those people, or you couldn't work with them going forward. It would be very difficult, you'd imagine.
Yeah, but it's Greg, the alternative is what? It's the only show in town. Mm. If they turn this down, where do they go? Mm-hmm. And you know, if in other words, they become the sort of the Sinn Féin of the 1960s. They make Northern Ireland unworkable and ungovernable, and that's for unionism. That's a disaster. So a lot of people maybe in unionism mightn't like this deal, but it's might be the least worst option for them. Greg, you know, some goods coming over. Getting stamped or maybe have custom inspection. Bottom line for a unionism is that there can be no constitutional change until a majority shows its sides under the terms of Good Friday Agreement. It doesn't change the constitutional position. Okay, it might sort of weaken some sort of aspects of and lead sort of more trade for the Republic and maybe give the South more influence. But the bottom line is the only place in these Isles where the EU and the UK meet is on the island of Ireland, and there was always going to have to be some sort of trade deal done on the island of Ireland. And the Windsor Framework looks like that's the deal, and unionists are going to have to learn to accept that.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time as always. Have a wonderful day, Pat, and we'll see how things pan out. That is Pat McCart there. Good morning, Greg. On Saturday morning in the Buncrana area, there was a black helicopter flying very low over the top of houses. Can you find out why this was, please? Now, there are quite a number of helicopters fly around the place. Leisure craft. They're not anything dodgy or anything. So possibly it's probably just someone flying around the place. I don't know. Or there is sometimes a helicopter that is used instead of the 118 that I've heard described in such a manner. I don't know if anyone out there, and I'm sure there is someone out there, knows why a black helicopter was flying over homes low on Saturday morning. Please let us know and we can pass it on to that listener. The government and the media has to listen to the majority of the Irish people and put a cap on immigration immediately. A referendum is required on the new EU pact on asylum migration as demanded by the Lisbon Treaty. Well, maybe the election is the referendum you talk of. I know that's not what you want, but... Another caller says, I think going with the times that's in it, the Irish song for the Eurovision, has a good chance of getting through this year and finishing in the top five. What will the begrudgers have to say then? I'm a big fan of Eurovision, but not particularly fond of the change of format. But hey, life has changed, and it is a theatrical, you know, type of a thing now, isn't it? Hi, Greg. Wonder could you mention, having been to the Donegal Sports Awards last Friday night, I have to commend the organisers and the venue. Can imagine there is so much organising to put on such an event, which is so enjoyable and inclusive of all sports. It really was great to see so many athletes from all types of sport across the county. Well done to all nominees and winners on the night. I was contacted by a few people who are fans of bowls with some concerns. I didn't get to fully read the messages yet, but no doubt hugely successful. Hi, Greg. We're over near St. Johnston. No broadband since Storm Isha. Can't help thinking it might have something to do with the tree lying on the fibre cable near Ballybuffet on the Lifford-Letterkenny Road. The telegraph poles are bent in from the strain. Not sure who's responsible even. Well, hopefully you've got on to your company and they should be able to give you some more information. Let me see. The song to represent Ireland is absolutely awful. What is Ireland coming to? Would rather be last or not even get into the final with a decent song than have to cringe through this one. And last one on that for now. Doomsday Blue, it's Father Ted's My Lovely Horse all over again. Brilliant. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're joined on the programme now by Marion Simpson and Breege Colquhoun. Ladies, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for having us.
No, it's our pleasure. Marion, you're both part of the Swilly Seals Swoon Group from Buncrana, and you've launched a fundraiser to have a defibrillator on the beach in Buncrana. Do you want to give us the background to this?
Well, Swilly Seals were set up in 2020, in September 2020. There was a few of us got together and we started swimming. during the height of COVID. And then gradually the numbers got bigger and bigger, and the group has gone from strength to strength. There's approximately 60 odd members wow. now in the group.
Yeah. It's impressive.
And we meet all the time. So we meet 4 times a week to swim, social, end of it and all. So that's where it all started. And we meet at Loddon Beach, a very busy beach, used by lots and lots of people. So we have a member, we had a member, Sinead McLaughlin, a very valuable member. And she unfortunately had an incident on the beach. And we have decided as a group to raise funds for a defibrillator on the beach.
And Breege, Sinead was incredibly well thought of. And I suppose it's fitting that this is being done in her memory.
Yeah, at the memory of Sinead, because she was a treasured member of the group. She was very involved in the community. She was a lovely girl. And this will benefit everybody, which she would love. You know, and we feel it's very important to have it on the beach as well, because it saves lives, more or less, and it's essential for the community.
Yeah, it really is. We know all too well, there's some excellent information that people put up in terms of the amount of times they're called out to deal with instances and how the defib can make a difference. And it's for everyone. It's for members of your group. It's for holidaymakers, other locals. Do you know what I mean? That so many people potentially could benefit from this, Breege.
Yeah, that's right. And the good thing about this, the whole community is chipping together and they're buying it. It's not the Swilly Seals. We're just getting it out there. Everybody else is buying this here. So it's great. It's great everybody coming together to do this in memory of Sinead.
And as part of this fundraiser, Marion, there is a coffee morning taking place in O'Flaherty's Bar. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, we started a few weeks ago with selling tickets. And we, first of all, have places that are selling the tickets for loads of beautiful prizes at Bradley's Filling Station, Apple Green, Fringe Bunkrana and Inishon Gateway. And also Super Value had allowed us last Friday to sell tickets at their entrance to their shop. But the highlight and all of this coming together will be on Friday morning, starting around 10:15 until approximately 1:30 or 2. 2 o'clock, 2 p.m. And
does everybody come along and support us?
This is, we're hoping for a good turnout. We have some excellent bakers in our group and in the community who are all supporting the cause on Friday.
Yeah.
And on the second, Friday the 2nd of February.
And Breege, I think, you know, obviously, and my condolences as well, in that you have lost a member of the group, but also a friend. And I think the generosity up until now, and hopefully carrying on through Friday, is a testimony to how well thought of Sinead was and what yes. she meant to people. That's why people are giving, I think, the response that they are up until now and will into the future.
Yeah, well, everybody's been so kind and so generous, and Sinead would have just loved this. She would have just loved this, wouldn't she?
Well, she would have been the first one to be doing something herself.
Yeah, yeah. She would have loved it.
You still blast through the target, I hope.
Yeah, and as well as that, we want to mention, if we have money left over, we're going to donate it to the RNLA. And a new charity in Bunkrana, the Bunkrana First Responders.
Brilliant. Okay. And those first responders groups are genuinely amazing. Now, you can get all of the information on a Facebook page. And it's Defibrillator for Ludden Beach Facebook page. There, are, if people can't buy tickets or they're from outside the area but love the beach or want to support you guys and remember Sinead, there's a Revolut number there as well, so there's no excuse. But ultimately, really, why we're speaking to you as well is to get along to O'Flaherty's Bar, Main Street, on Friday the 2nd of February. Marion's pretty loose with the times. 10:15. We'll finish at 1:30, 2:00. I think just get there for 10. Get there for 10 and something will be happening. And it might finish at 1:30 or it might finish at 2:00, but there'll be loads of stuff and a cup of tea or coffee for you. Is that right, Marion?
Yeah, the door is completely open and any time at all anybody wants to come along, we will not be turning anyone away. And we would like also to thank O'Flaherty's Bar and their owners and staff who have been so accommodating to us so far.
And just again to remember Sinead McLaughlin Breach, who this is all about. I mean, we would love if she was with us still, of course. But as I said, it's a beautiful way to honour her memory. And again, my condolences on you losing a very valuable group member and a real friend as well, because it's sad that this is why we're doing this, but I wore used to doing it, but still it's in her memory, and as you say, she'd love it.
Yeah, she would just love this. So
okay, listen, I'm sure it's going to be a huge success. Keep us updated. Anything, any further help I can give or whatever, let us know, and we'll be more than happy to do that. And get along to O'Flaherty's Bar, Main Street, Friday the 2nd of February, believe it or not, from 10:15 onwards. And there'll be loads of great stuff there, won't there? Tea, coffees, bakes, I'm sure, and all that kind of stuff.
Some beautiful stuff. And right. Loads of prizes.
Loads of prizes on the day. Well done to you all.
Thank you so very much indeed.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Marion Simpson and Breach Colquhoun, part of the Swilly Seals swimming group from Buncrana. Now, new rules introduced by the European Parliament will be instrumental, we're told, in revealing the true extent of the silent industry of human trafficking in Ireland. Maria Walsh, MEP, was amongst a group of MEPs that wrote the revision to the EU's anti-trafficking directive aimed at strengthening protections for victims of trafficking. And Maria Walsh joins us on the programme now. Maria, thank you so much for your time, as always.
Thank you. Good morning to you all.
What is human trafficking sort of in an Irish context?
Yeah, so for those listening, human trafficking is the trade of humans, be it for forced labour, for sexual slavery, sexual exploitation. We've also seen increases of the use of trafficking children through drug cartels, and also labour and sexual exploitation. And there's a physical and, of course, an online way of how it's controlled and, dare I say, coercive control in bringing people, innocent people, into the trafficking industry. So we've seen reports of a significant amount of women and young girls being trafficked online. The selling of a story from a trafficker about a future relationship, opportunity, both inside the EU and outside the EU, a better life, and then that force of coercive control. And then, unfortunately, we've also seen high numbers of disproportionately affecting women and young girls taken from streets and just moved very quickly.
Yeah, and I think the reason I wanted you to clarify that, Maria, because I think a lot of us might think it's about moving people in lorries or what have you, you know, and I'm not saying that's not the case, but it's just, I think, the imagery or the notion that people associate with human trafficking. And we're not talking, and if we were, it would still be bad. We're not talking about one or two people a year, or five or ten, or a problem we actually don't really know the extent of. We do have really quite firm estimates as to the amount of people trafficked in and out of Ireland on an annual basis.
Yeah, so this report, this revision on human trafficking, so the initial report, say, or the initial body of legislation happened about 12 years ago. And the reason the revision has happened, and some listening might say, well, do we need a revision this quickly? Or some say, why didn't we have this a lot sooner? I would be in the latter category, considering the amount of people being trafficked that we know of. So right now, from working with experts within the anti-slavery and trafficking organizations, a gentleman called Kevin Hyland, who worked very closely for 30 years in the United Kingdom as a police officer, very much focusing on ending and eradicating the anti-trafficking and the trafficking movement. He led his expertise also in Ireland. But with speaking with him over the course of this rewrite of legislation, he estimates about 3,000 to 4,000 people have been trafficked in and out of Ireland on a yearly basis. When you look at the EU overall, about 18 member states out of the 27 have seen dramatic increases of people being trafficked. However, what this revision is calling for is more data and more reporting so we actually know the full extent.
What do we do about the people, though? Because, listen, this is completely anecdotal, but I have read court cases of women that have been brought before the courts and they've been accused of being sex workers. So they've admitted that and they've been told, you know, you can avoid this, but you have to return home in a certain amount of time. And that's that. And I just wonder, you know, like if they are victims and probably are, what supports are being given to them? What level of understanding? What is happening to ensure that there isn't some person sitting outside in a van waiting for them to walk out of the courts? Do you know what I mean? That,
like, absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought this up because this was something that was quite contentious in the Parliament and something as co-writers or as we say, shadow rapporteurs and rapporteurs were really keen on making sure we were distinguishing those that are the traffickers and those that are being trafficked. And ultimately, if you are an EU citizen, and I have to stress to those listening, a quarter of registered victims being trafficked in the EU are from the member states. So to back to your question previously, you know, you assume they're coming from far enough lands, they're coming over in various forms, illegally, but that's not always the case in trafficking. So I just really wanted to distinguish that. When we look at those victims, what was happening and what was being reported by NGOs, and we heard from people who had come through and sadly been trafficked and are now on the other side trying to rebuild their life, they were excluded from various forms of supports at in member states. So we really wanted to fix that. And when in this revision, it would mean that if you were from outside the EU, it wouldn't discontinue or make you push you out of the asylum or the international protection mechanism. So those supports in place that you would still be able to apply and move through that. When you are an EU citizen, those move a little bit quickly because you are obviously have born here or have resided here for a long period of time. And it's about getting the appropriate therapy support, working with the guards in our case and the judicial system, and very much putting the victim and the survivor at the centre of
everything. And just finally, because we don't have a ton of time too, though, in terms of, like, in fairness to the Gardaí, we've had Gardaí on this programme appealing to people who may be trafficked and who are the victim of crime or whatever it might be to come forward, and they'd be listened with, they'd be dealt with sympathetically. And I accept that that's the case, okay, but we have to make sure that the whole system is designed in that way, because we don't really know what's happening to these people, because I would imagine many of them don't come forward. You know, they've already been the victim of trafficking, but what are the victims of when they're actually here? Now, I know I'm focusing on a certain group of trafficked people.
And fear pays. But this is a really important conversation, because I think fear pays is a compelling argument. You know, you're terrified to put your hand forward because do you face prosecution for any crimes, perhaps prostitution that you are a part of? Do you have family members in other member states or other countries that you're being told are also in play here and could face real serious injury and harm? Do you have enough financial supports to actually move through this? So there's a lot of implications. And to your point, I really compel anybody who believes or thinks of or themselves are being trafficked, please reach out. We have an anti-trafficking unit within the guards. Please use them and make sure that they are able to do their job. And ultimately, this revision is about reporting, collecting data, educating and training judicial systems, law enforcement, people who are working in hotels that might see a high rate of those being trafficked. So it's all around being and showing up better for each other so that we can eradicate the $150 billion industry that we have worldwide.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And in terms of the human trafficking and those that are trafficked here, and are forced to be sex workers or whatever it might be, there are also customers as well. And I think people should be conscious of whether or not they are supporting the exploitation of people on this level. And just in 30 seconds, if you can, where will Ireland get this information, the data, to pass on to the European Commission, if you know what I mean? So that's one thing, yes, I don't fully get on.
Absolutely.
That.
So NGOs and how they work on the ground. So I got to give a shout out to MECPATS, who do a lot within the child trafficking space, or RUMAS, who does a lot within prostitution and sexual exploitation space here in Ireland. You have obviously members of the guards, our frontline services in terms of those who work in hospitals, hospitality. I know MECPATS is doing a lot of training with semi-state bodies like TUSLA also, so that we can be aware of it, mm-hmm. people are trained. And that feeds into on an annual basis. So ultimately, we know then different revisions. There is a piece of work to do online. And I say that as an Irish MEP in a country where we have a number of large tech companies. So we have a lot of work to do at national level and across the EU to make sure anybody who's involved in the trafficking online space in that course of control gets shut down a lot faster.
Okay, MEP Maria Walsh, thank you very much for your time. We'll be back with the news just a minute or two past 11.